Showing Up is about uncovering what it takes to get to where you want to go by learning from the different fields of design, business, tech, and the arts. Welcome to the third episode of Showing Up. Today is a special episode. Arthur and I would be answering questions from our crew. You can always follow us on Instagram at Foreign Policy Design. So today is a really special episode. Arthur and I would be answering questions from the crew. So who are we? My name is Yaling and I'm the creative director at Foreign Policy Design Group. My partner is Arthur. We lead the team at Foreign Policy Design Group. We are a branding and design office that help brand makers create, innovate, and pivot their business using design. Foreign Policy has won awards from DNAD, Tokyo Type Directors Club, New York Art Directors Club, and we have been pretty active in the community, creating projects such as the Museum Store at National Gallery Singapore, Gallery & Co., the Space Program, Design PASA, Design Diplomacy, and most recently, the Foreign Policy Summer School. So, let's hear what we have to say.
Tell us about your background. What were you doing before Foreign Policy, and how did you get started on this design journey?
Oh, well, long story cut short. Right? Before Foreign Policy, I was actually working in New York, but way before that, how did I get to America is another story that I guess I could share. I was at NTU doing computer technology at the time. I realized that it wasn't the sort of career that I'm going to be pursuing for the rest of my life after the first day when I entered the classroom, because it's not what I expected. So I probably didn't read the prospectus or the course when I signed up for this computer technology. So I guess I got a little bit, I feel challenged, and because it wasn't an easy course, and I felt a bit discouraged at that point. But a bike accident actually woke me up. So I was staying in hostel, and I had two other friends who rode bikes with me after school hours. And one day I borrowed a bike from my friend. He is a guy, and the bike was a racer bike that was much taller than I was. And I, you know, as a young person, I was reckless, and as I could wing this. So I took the bike, and we went off for a ride, and I met with the accident coming down from the cliff. That was a windy road, because a double-decker bus was coming in, and then what happened was it was a single-lane kind of situation, and I didn't expect a Mercedes to come right behind the bus, and that caught me off guard, and I was trying to brake. I couldn't, because the brake was gone. So I was like, oh my God, is this the end of me? Sort of few seconds of like, oh God, flashed across. And then the next thing I knew, I woke up from the unconsciousness. I actually was unconscious for a couple minutes, maybe, I'm not sure how long, but it was not long. I was injured, but was not fatal. But that was the point of my life where I started to realize that time is short, and I shouldn't be wasting time complaining about life because I'm here or whatever. I should do something about it. So that was when I decided to make a plan to get out of that situation and pursue something that I really want to do. So fast forward, I made a plan. I hatched a plan to drop out of school because there was no way I could get out. So the only way was to fail the exams, which I did. So that was the only excuse I could tell my parents that I am no good for this. I can get out. Because I guess throughout the years, I had been a good student. So there wasn't any reason for them to allow me to get out of the system. So that was the only way. Then I worked my way to find myself the way to America. So what I did was I decided to go to a community college, that I would take my foundation classes, which I could transfer to the eventual school. And during the spring break, I traveled to the schools that I already knew about, like Pratt Institute, Pratt Institute, FIT, RISD, and Yale University. So those are the schools that they are still famous for design. And I took my time to visit the school grounds, talked with teachers, and kind of, you know, suss out the environment there. But I guess I didn't like the harsh environment of New York at that time. It was a bit too rough for me. Felt like it was a place where I could come back when I am ready for work. As for New Haven, Rhode Island, I don't know. I just felt it was sort of not my thing. I felt a bit down, gloomy. So when I was headed up north to visit my friend in Boston, she was taking a course in, she was actually studying in Berklee College of Music. So she was the only friend of all my friends who went overseas who did non-business degree. So, I mean, naturally, I'm quite close to her. So, and Boston, it was love at first sight because it was a small town, it was a college town, and, you know, all the famous schools in the world are there. So, immediately I was attracted to the environment, and there was a lot of, there was an ecosystem within every school that you could swap or exchange elective with. So that interested me, and I felt like I did not necessarily need to enroll in a super famous school because I realized that the teachers actually move around the school system. So I decided to pick a school in Boston to start at. And then I guess that's how it got started.
Major in finance and marketing. So yeah, I fell into that category where she said most people falls into the business side. I guess for me, there's a huge complementary set for us. Yaling is creative and imaginary. I'm a little bit more binary, a little bit more one and zero. She's about 0.11, 0.1255, 6678, you know.
When you first came back to Singapore, what did you think of the design and creative landscape? What was navigating that like?
Well, I guess Yaling has a very interesting point of view. But for me, coming back to Singapore at that time, the first experience was new. Singapore landscape was a bit new to us, and the scale was also small. I remember I had this first project conversation about print job, and I remember very distinctively the client said, oh, we run a very large print size. And I asked her the question, oh, so how large are we talking about? She said, very, very large. I said, yeah, but give me a number so I know roughly what the budget might be. And she said, 2,000. And I was dumbfounded because back in the US, when we run a print job, it's 64,000, 128,000 when we consider that as a sizable run. But here is a 2,000 run, because it's considered a sizable run. I guess it's a lot about adjustment. There's no right or wrong. It's what works in that particular market.
Going back to the start, when you founded Foreign Policy in 2006, what was your vision back then, and how do you think that has evolved over time?
Vision. Okay, I guess I talked about it just now, about how we could maybe make a difference, do something different as a design studio, offering a more, I guess, impactful set of services maybe. And see how we can grow from there. I guess for us, it was also experimental because I've never worked in Singapore. I've no inkling about the printers here or of any other sort of business behaviors and trends or whatever that's happening here. So we actually took it really easy for the first years. We didn't really do anything. I mean, we're just like really understanding the landscape, you know, meeting people like Chris Lee, Pan Lim, and you know, getting to know the design industry, you know, trying out the government jobs, really to get us used to what Singapore is like. And then how do we adapt to this small economy? Because coming from New York, I was just focusing on interactive design, digital design, mainly in like the fashion and lifestyle sector, that's it. But for Singapore, I realized that there's no way that you can just offer one skill set in one industry, there's no way. So we had to quickly adapt, you know, and my background is graphic design. So, and I have experiences in multimedia and digital and web design. So I think that was quite helpful at that, I guess. And then with Arthur's experience and knowledge in business and finance, it added the, I guess, our power. Yeah.
Do you remember what the studio was like during the early days?
Our beginning, we were, because we were staying with his parents. We came back because his parents were unwell. So we stayed with his parents and basically converted his bedroom to a
couple's room.
A work office at the same time. So we just kind of redid the desk situation where we were able to accommodate two computers. Then a couple months later, we moved into a shared office situation with a relative at that point. And it was in a
industrial
area. It was, I guess at that point, it was a culture shock for me, reverse culture shock, because I've never worked in an industrial situation before. We were there for like, it was a windowless.
It was 200 square feet, windowless. I remember walking in, there's this peculiar blue carpet. Strangely enough, we use another shade of blue right now for our studio brand color. But that blue was quite special and it was quite strange walking in. Because it kind of didn't quite work with what our personal aspiration were. So one thing that Yaling said, we have to change the carpet. So we changed our carpet.
To a gray carpet.
We were there for just, I think, 9 months.
Not long.
9 months, we moved out. We got a really beautiful little place in Muhammad Ali Lane that was just right off Anxiang. That was a beautiful space. Unfortunately, after some time, we couldn't continue there because the landlord sold the entire building, so we have to move out and became a hostel or something. But the journey has been interesting.
Yeah. Then we moved to Tiong Bahru. Been there for like 6.5 years, and then we moved to Jalan Besar here for like 2 years now, celebrating.
At what point did you realize that you've gained enough traction and you're going to be in this for the long haul?
Around 2012, maybe that was the point. Because I think in 2009, 2010, we were able to work with some really incredible visionary people. Like Loh Lik Peng, we worked with him on many of his hospitality projects, and that helped us build, put together a really nice portfolio, which helped us gain other projects, right? So I think that was the point where you realized that, I mean, maybe it's even before 2012, I think that was the point where you realized that, hey, there's something here interesting, there's something really exciting. And I know we were working our ass off during that time because it was also very small, it's just two of us, maybe two or three other team members.
Yeah, I guess Lik Peng played a big part in terms of how FP became who we are today. I almost felt that because at that time he was very, very active in the scene and still is, doing amazing stuff, amazing venues, amazing hotels, amazing projects, and we were able to partake in some of those. And I felt that I think he helped us a lot by through the opportunity that was given to us, and I felt that was a big turning point for us. Mm.
In those 6 years, were there moments where you wanted to throw in the towel or give up?
I'm not sure whether that ever crossed our mind to throw in the towel, but of course there were difficult moments. I remember the first paycheck that we wrote for us was like $200 or something. And it was also quite difficult because Yaling's basically spent her formative years in the US. So her network in terms of creative here wasn't that great. You know, we don't even know which printer to work with and all those. But I guess it's about figuring things out along the way. I guess is just keep going.
Yeah, just go at it.
Yeah, keep going.
Not giving up. And yeah, I guess that was right. I didn't have anyone to like network with. Like, I guess like a lot of the designers here, they went to the same school. So they have this network of friends. And some of the friends might have, you know, be doing other discipline in design discipline. So they could always come together for, you know, to back each other up or to collaborate or stuff like that. I felt like I didn't have that. But then I guess the blessing is that we were able to work with great clients and partners.
What do you think is the hardest decision or the greatest risk that you took?
For me, right, personally, I don't really think about risk. So I just forge ahead. And then maybe I might regret after and then I say, oh, that could have been averted. But I still don't see them as risks. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe one thing I can think about potentially was a publication project that we worked on, Brand Guide. So we did Brand Guide, which is a self-finance. We could manage to get a little bit of government support, but by and large, it was self-finance. You know, our own designers, our own, you know,
time.
Photographers and copywriters and time and people that we interview. To me, the investment required to pull that off was significant. It was a big number, and we literally went in without knowing whether it will work or not work. It wasn't even a conversation. But on hindsight, that was quite a risky move because it is a very sizable investment.
What are some of the biggest challenges you faced?
Gathering coach.
Yeah, I mean, Gallery & Co. was one of the most complex, the museum store and cafe that we did at the National Gallery. It was one of the most complex projects that we did with two amazing partners of ours. It was full on, wholehearted to do something. I feel that it was something that we felt that we put in all in. It was an all in for us, literally.
Everything on the table.
Yeah, I think the entire studio worked on it for 2 years. Lots of amazing people invested their time.
Their heart,
yeah. I thought that was, yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have happened without the contribution of all those amazing designers.
What are some of the biggest challenges you faced?
I think one of the things that still bothering me, keeps me up at night, is one of the projects that we did maybe 2 years ago. I started the project, working in a project quite heavily involved, but then I had to go away because of maternity leave, you know, with the arrival of Ray. So then the project was left with the team and then I mean, towards the end, we realized that the clients were not happy with, you know, what happened and what was, what resulted out of it. And there was a lot of, I guess, unhappiness because, mainly also because I wasn't involved in the project and that there was a lot of, there's a lapse in standards or there's a lot of miscommunications that resulted in say, you know, the production or the whatever that was needed to be made. And to do this, to deal till this day, it kills me. Thinking about it kills me a bit. still.
Yeah, I think for that particular project is quite interesting because that project has three big chunks. The chunk that Yaling referred to is one of the chunks, but the other two chunks was actually really well done. So it was a disappointment because it feels that it felt like we put in a lot of effort. We did really well. We're supposed to do really well on all the three chunks, but one of the chunks kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And that's not good in general because when a client signs up a studio, there's a lot of trust and they're kind of still bothers
us. I guess from the, we had a chat after that and then they articulated their, you know, like they came here and they were really happy that, you know, we were quite heavily involved in the beginning, and I was, you know, whatever we did up till when I was there, we were really happy about it. And then it just felt like we threw everything to the interns, and then it felt like they were
not that we threw it to the interns.
I mean, yeah. I think from their perception,
it felt like
we did, and you know, and they felt like maybe they were not taken care of, and then maybe just felt. I just feel like there was a lot of miscommunication at that point, and it's very hard for me. I didn't want to defend myself because there wasn't anything to defend about because I wasn't there.
What does 2021 look like?
I think 2021 is a lot about staying very, very tight with the current team. Current team is, I would say, has a lot of potential. And Yaling is also able to find the time to be a lot more involved. And I think that the team is going to benefit tremendously from that as well. And then to grow the next generation of leaders within the studio. And also for me, hopefully over the next few years, is try to do projects, hopefully, that is outside of our areas of comfort. I think that's the way to let the studio kind of stretch a bit and grow a little bit. Of course, we don't know everything, but what we do know is how to figure things out.
Who's your dream client or what's your dream project?
Well, I once said a dental group would be fun to work on. Like, I feel that the whole dentistry market, I think there's a huge potential to see what CAM design and design thinking contribute towards that space. I feel that, dental group would be quite fun to work on.
What stresses you out the most at work?
Stresses me out? Different things. I guess... making sure that the project is able to reach a certain standard so that it's impactful, not just pretty, you know. It has to say something, it has to reach the heart, you know. Sometimes it's difficult to do, but every project, that is the code that I need to decode. to crack. And of course, the other thing is making sure that everyone who is working here is happy and driven and is having fun doing what they're doing.
Do you think that the process of cracking the code has gotten easier over time?
I think yes and no. Yes, because I've gotten more experience. I've done this for like, 20 years. so I definitely have more experience than the team, but they bring a younger perspective that together it becomes magic, you know. So it's very important. It's very important, yeah.
What would your autobiography be called?
I guess for me, if I'm going to have an autobiography, it will be Expedition. I feel that for me, over the next few years, I would like it to be one of a story of exploration into realms where you really have no idea what you're going to land up in or what you're going to find out. And I feel that that's the beauty of Expedition.
I think for me, it's... just action words, go for it, because that's kind of how I operate on. I always go with my guts, my instinct, and I always just go for it. So that would be my title of the book, my book.
What's the most fun you've had in the studio?
The most fun? Can I share my most fun?
Yeah.
The most fun was when we were still at Yong Siak Street, Tiong Bahru, and that was a crazy year, right? 2014 or those times.
That's crazy.
We did a lot of cooking, we had Hunger Games, like we divided ourselves into the mini groups, two or three, and then we cooked against one another. That was fun, I felt.
We also recently took a simple trip to Batam.
That was really fun.
That I enjoy a lot. That was so fun. Even though it was so near and nothing fancy. Yeah.
It was only one night, right? But I felt like we did so much.
That was fun.
Yeah.
What's your greatest project of all time?
So many.
I think there are many fun projects. I think fundamentally it oftentimes comes down to the client. I feel that the camaraderie, that sort of like bond and friendship, a lot of them become friends, is actually one of the magic ingredients to creating amazing projects. I think that is sometimes not spoken too much about, but that sort of energy and camaraderie is an essential key ingredient. Mm.